The State Department of Health Services recorded 3,279 new cases of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. We now collectively have had more than 155,000 positive cases in the state. 34 people died from the virus in the last 24 hours, bringing the total number of deaths to 1,508. Today's positive test count and the death toll are both records in Wisconsin. As the summer came to a close, Wisconsin saw a notable increase in the number of positive tests, and the number of cases and hospitalizations has been growing since then. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions or concerns do you have about this big jump of COVID-19 here in the state? What do you want to know about the virus, the potential vaccine, potential treatments in the future? What are you doing to try to stay safe? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Amanda Simonek is an associate professor of epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's also one of the editors of the Dear Pandemic online forum. Amanda, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, what is behind, do you think, these growing numbers leading up to this record, unfortunate record day here in Wisconsin when it comes to COVID-19?
Yeah, it's not the kind of records we want to be breaking here in Wisconsin or anywhere, actually. I think this is the buildup. This is the accumulation of cases over time, over the past few months, over this summer. You know, the Safer at Home order came to an end abruptly in May. And while we had done a lot to flatten the curve, I don't think we were, you know, ready to lift that Safer at Home order in terms of having the other infrastructure pieces in place around testing and around contact tracing that really needed to be ready to replace everybody staying home as our main mechanism for containing the virus. And then over the past few months, we've all, you know, enjoyed sort of some semblance of normalcy, returning to social interactions or activities, perhaps not exactly as we had been doing before, hopefully while wearing masks and social distancing. But you know, we saw a surge in cases in younger individuals over the summer months. And I have, there's unfortunately a lag where it's really hard to keep, you know, younger people separate from older or more vulnerable individuals in the population. So once we see cases surge in one group, it will carry over and spill over into older individuals who are vulnerable to complications. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here, unfortunately. And, you know, for us in public health and as epidemiologists, it's, you know, it's upsetting to know that this facility we built back in March that we hoped we'd never have to use is actually, you know, having to be utilized now as an alternative care space for people who are hospitalized with COVID-19.
Yeah. Can you talk about the stress this is putting on hospitals now? We managed to beat that scenario early in this thing. It seemed like we flattened the curve, like you said, for a while there. What are we seeing in hospitals now?
Yeah. I mean, I think surges in certain regions of Wisconsin, namely the Fox Valley, the Northeast and the Southeast region, where the growth in hospitalizations and ICU use was surging last week. So the decision was made to open that alternative care facility to try to allow patients that only, you know, are lower acuity, they don't need as intensive of care, to be moved to those facilities to free up space in some of these other areas of the state where we are needing to hospitalize people and they do need, you know, a ICU space.
I wanted to ask about a claim that's come up on and off throughout the pandemic from members of the public, some in the political world, the claim that the COVID death toll is overstated. The arguments are either, well, look, death certificates list COVID and something else on them, or some of the cases, you know, they weren't actually tested for COVID. They were just based on clinical descriptions. Is there a problem with an overstatement of deaths because of COVID?
You know, there's not. We've seen, and one way we can look at this, because it, you know, it gets around this idea of how do we diagnose a COVID death versus a death that would have occurred anyway, is to look at excess deaths, excess mortality that's occurring this time of year compared to this time last year. And what we see is, you know, I think, estimates of upwards of 20% more deaths. And that's just looking at all over deaths, right? And so we know that people are dying of COVID-19, that people with chronic conditions, you know, who get COVID-19 are dying sooner than they would have otherwise.
We are talking about the latest news in COVID numbers here in Wisconsin, talking to an epidemiologist about what's going on and what could help turn things around in the future. Amanda Simonek with us from UW-Milwaukee and editor of the Dear Pandemic Online Forum. You could join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's go to a caller now. Amy is with us in Arvina. Amy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So back in April, a dear friend who's a scientist at the U, has 20 years in virology, was warning that we should prepare through the winter. And since then, I've been stunned by how politicians on either side, like one side actually, they're pretending like it doesn't exist or that it's no big deal because someone else is dying, not them. And the other side just isn't taking a strong enough stance. This is a life or death situation. There's a lot of unknowns. And I personally have experienced a loved one in my immediate family being in the hospital with severe pneumonia, and nobody could spend time with him. We couldn't visit him, and he wasn't able to talk on the phone. And so not only was that traumatizing for us and him, it was also extra burden on our healthcare workers. And so in addition to that, we've got, where I live near Sauk County, the school district is just completely upside down because our health department in Sauk County, the director just left because he wouldn't falsify information. It is utter chaos.
Amy, thanks a lot for the call. Amanda, Amy's saying that at a lot of levels, she is not seeing this thing being taken seriously or appropriate measures taken.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we really need to follow the science, and that's the bottom line. The science tells us, you know, that this is a severe respiratory illness, that it spreads easily, that the ways that we can stop it are through social distancing and mask use. You know, something that is particular about this infection is that starting about 2 days before you develop symptoms yourself, you can transmit this infection to others. That makes it really different from seasonal influenza, for example. With seasonal influenza, you're most likely to transmit to people the day you develop symptoms, the day after. And by then, you're already kind of in bed, recuperating and isolating yourself, you know, from people outside your household. With this infection, you know, we have to basically assume that we may be infected if we've been out in the public and that we need to protect other people from this infection. And so, you know, the more that we can embrace that idea that it's up to us to wear masks, to limit our social interactions, the better we'll be at containing this outbreak.
Let's bring on another caller. Ray is with us in Milwaukee. Ray, hello.
Since the majority of deaths, especially here in the United States, are older people, 60 and up. That's more than 90% of the deaths are the people 60 and up. Those, a lot of those people have already retired or are near retirement. Couldn't we just quarantine and protect the people at risk? Because the rest of us got to keep working, shutting down an entire country for basically what is a severe seasonal flu. I don't care what your guest there says, the numbers say different. The seasonal flu is 0.1%. COVID is 0.03%.
Do you want to address that, comparing this to a seasonal flu? This has killed way more people than any seasonal flu in, what, a century?
Yes. But I would like to address the issue of sort of protecting vulnerable individuals and letting the economy otherwise go back to normal or letting people interact, you know, on a normal level. And this is really a misunderstanding of how this infection will spread in the population. So, you know, number one, it's you know, very difficult. It would be very difficult to truly isolate people who are vulnerable. And those are not just people who are 60 and older. It would be other people that have chronic conditions, you know, people that are immune compromised, that are younger. So it wouldn't realistically only be individuals. And we also don't want to socially isolate a portion of our population. But if you think about assisted living centers and other places, they're largely staffed by younger individuals, right? So it's not realistic to expect or this to work, right? To sort of shield part of the population and let this infection run rampant in the other part of the population in order to have the economy reboot. And really, that's a false dichotomy. I think we can find a compromise where, you know, we open sectors of the economy smartly, and we support those sectors that need sort of financial support in order to function during this pandemic period, you know, but sort of sequestering off a portion of the population isn't going to be a realistic tactic for controlling this infection. Another reason why is that even people who don't die from this infection have long-term complications in many cases. So there's a whole sector of people who are getting COVID-19 that are called long haulers that for whatever reason, you know, months go by and they don't recover. They're experiencing symptoms like chronic fatigue, you know, trouble breathing, muscle weakness, brain fog, you know. So there's sort of this persistent post-COVID viral syndrome that is lasting for months for people, which can cause a lot of, you know, disability essentially and inability to re-enter the workforce. So this idea that we could realistically put, you know, some portion of the population back into work and sequester the vulnerable individuals is really just not a tenable solution.
We're talking to Amanda Simonek, Associate Professor of Epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. She's one of the editors of the Dear Pandemic online forum, looking at the latest COVID-19 numbers and news. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the latest COVID news in Wisconsin with Amanda Simonek, Associate Professor of Epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. John is with us in Green Bay. John, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to say, I think we need to just be truthful with what's going on. I'm a driver. I don't want to say where I work, but everywhere I go, north of Green Bay, nobody at all is wearing a mask. Not one person. That's all I got to say.
John, thanks. John's sharing his observational data there. Amanda, there are places at least where he says people are not wearing masks at all. What needs to happen to spread the message further?
Well, we do have a statewide mask mandate, you know, and the hope is that that enables businesses and other places where the public can be indoors to wear masks. The more people that wear masks, they protect each other, right? So the mask will keep the droplets that you might expel while you're talking, while you're, sneezing, while you're coughing, out in public behind your mask and with you. And so will the other person's mask serve that purpose. I think as we head into the winter months, these practices around social distancing and mask use are going to be extremely important because in indoor spaces where there may not be as good of ventilation, that's really going to be key. And we need to, as the temperature cools and we have to move indoors, we really are going to have to embrace mask use in those indoor spaces to help prevent transmission of COVID.
Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Jerry is with us now in Glendale. Jerry, hi.
Hi. I think one of the issues that we have in this country about people not really buying in to doing what the CDC recommends around masks as well as social distancing. It's been building up for several decades that we have vested interest beating the drum that individual rights supersede concerns for the community. So I think for quite some time now, we've had a seedbed that really has emboldened people to put their own self-interest ahead of concerns for how we're affecting each other with deadly consequences.
Thanks for the call. Can you talk about, I guess, a little more on public health messaging, Amanda, to overcome what Jerry's talking about?
Yeah, you know, I think that all of us want to get back to a more normal life, you know, and the challenge is that when we have high levels of transmission of COVID in the community, it increases the risk for anything that we might want to do, right? And so the way that we can most quickly get back to more normalcy and, you know, being able to socialize and be enjoying restaurants and movie theaters and businesses is to make a collective effort to stop the spread of transmission of COVID-19. And the sooner, you know, the more more we rally around this idea and the more we work now to flatten this curve, this surge of cases that's been occurring, you know, then we can return to some normalcy. And so I hope that people will embrace, you know, the public health messaging and the mechanisms that have been discussed for the past 7 months around keeping your social circle small and consistent, wearing masks, keeping, you know, space between you and other individuals, and trying to avoid poorly ventilated indoor spaces, because that these are the settings in which, you know, a lot of transmission happens. And so, you know, I think the call to the state of Wisconsin is to come together to, you know, rally around what we know works to stop the transmission of this virus.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to epidemiology professor Amanda Simonek from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the latest COVID-19 news and taking your calls and questions. Back to your calls now. Tom is with us in Milwaukee. Tom, hi.
Hi. I'm wondering, for the people that do take appropriate precautions for COVID-19, wearing masks and sanitizing or washing their hands, what is the risk for succumbing to the annual influenza?
That's a great question. So, you know, many of the measures that are being recommended in terms of social distancing and mask use and hand washing are going to help mitigate the spread of influenza virus as well, because that is also a respiratory virus that's passed through coughing and sneezing and droplets. So we hope that through those measures being taken, we do see a reduced burden of influenza this season. I will say that one of the best things that anyone can do right now, in addition to, you know, maintaining space, masks, well-ventilated space, restricting your social circles and the time that you spend in gatherings, is to get a flu shot. You know, the more we can reduce the coexisting burden of influenza and COVID-19 as we head into winter, the better. These are two viruses that have very similar symptoms. So if you develop influenza and you go to the doctor, they're almost certainly going to have to test you for both influenza and COVID to rule out COVID-19 and determine the best course of treatment, and also so that we can notify your contacts that, you know, they were exposed to someone with COVID-19. And so that means the more flu we have circulating, the more testing, you know, strain we're going to have on our systems that are available for testing for COVID-19. There's also a fair number of people who do become hospitalized because of influenza. Both older individuals tend to be vulnerable to influenza as well as very young children. And so, you know, as we are already experiencing, you know, increased surges in use of hospitals across the state and the need to open an alternative care facility, the last thing we want to do is add influenza cases of, you know, that need to be hospitalized to that population.
Time for one more caller. Let's bring on Kimberly in Fox Lake. Kimberly, hi.
Hi. So Where I live, like, nobody wears masks, and my boyfriend's working up in Green Bay, and he is one person on a job site of 1,000 wearing a mask. What is our current trajectory if people just blatantly don't wear a mask and don't social distance?
Yeah, it's unfortunately, you know, right now, because cases are surging, we should expect, and I think that's part of the anticipation in opening the alternative care site or lifting it off the ground, is because there is this lag, right, between when people become a case and then when they need to be hospitalized. And so until we can see a decline in cases, we should expect an increase in those that need to be hospitalized. And so I give your boyfriend credit that he wears a mask in an environment where it's maybe not encouraged or supported. And hopefully he sets a good example for others. And he, you know, through wearing that mask and through maintaining distance from others, he's protecting others from himself. So thanks to him for that.
Thanks for calling in, Kimberly. And Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Thank you, Rob.
We've been talking to Amanda Simonek, Associate Professor of Epidemiology in the Joseph J. Zilber School of Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She's one of the editors of the Dear Pandemic Online Forum. She joined us today to talk about the latest COVID-19 news in Wisconsin. Not good news, record numbers in both the number of positive cases and deaths in the state, according to the state health department today. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics, including Supreme Court confirmation hearings and still more back and forth on pandemic stimulus. As political rhetoric heats up with concerns about violence, a guest says there's a lot that the media, political leaders, and the public can do to help calm things down. And it's apple season in Wisconsin, and Apple expert takes us on a tour of some great varieties that may be off the beaten path and can add a lot to our baking and our snacking. Let us know your favorite apple. Email ideas@WPR.org. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.